Jack Rice Defense. It's jackricelaw.com, jackricelaw.com. Best defense lawyer in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Also a national pundit when it comes to political news. Jack, first of all, thanks for the time. I appreciate it, my friend.
Always. Come on. You called me. You asked. I'm there.
You did. And I tell you, I love Jack because it's like very quick. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll be there. I'm like, great. Thanks. I appreciate it. If you don't mind me asking, this is breaking news. Former Trump White House senior advisor, Trump campaign manager Steve Bannon, indicted by a federal grand jury, and a warrant for his arrest has been issued. People had been questioning why the Department of Justice had been dragging their heels on this. And it looks like they're, well, for lack of a better way to say it, dotting I's and crossing T's. But they've apparently finished that now. And a warrant is out for his arrest.
Yeah, well, you know what? They want to make sure they do this right. I mean, after the fact that what we've seen in the past, what happened with the pardons, with all of the other issues that are out there, you want to be very, very clear. But if you're going to issue a warrant for somebody's arrest, if you're going to have an indictment, you want to make sure that the indictment is outside of any potential pardon, outside of anything that he could actually avoid to wiggle out of the charge. So justice is looking at this very carefully, and they don't want to make any mistakes because, let's face it, you get egg on your face, it makes it that much harder to do your job.
He did sort of taunt the Biden administration and Biden's Department of Justice by admitting to the crimes for the most part. On his podcast and on shows and basically saying, daring them to do so. I'm going to imagine at this point, his lawyer might be looking at him saying, you know what, let's tone down on the, you know, confessions on air from his point forward.
Yeah, you would think so, wouldn't you? But I think that under these circumstances, client control is one of those things that I think might be really difficult. Let's face it, Bannon, you look at his former boss. The idea of actually having either of them as clients would be a nightmare. Just a complete and utter nightmare.
Well, and the reason why, I mean, they're basically down. It's like when you drive through Georgia and you see the law hammer, is, you know, the billboard every 20 miles where it's a guy, I'm the hammer, I'll bring you justice. That's who basically the only people left that will defend these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, under the circumstances, you can't deny that it's a pretty weird situation. But let's face it. I mean, if you take a look at what's going on in the criminal justice system right now, all over the country, I mean, everywhere from what's going on inside the Beltway to what's going on with the Rittenhouse case in Kenosha, Wisconsin, what's going on with the Arbery case in Georgia right now, let alone the hate video that just came out in Prior Lake just 2 days ago, against a young African-American girl. You add all of this together and you can't help but scratch your head and say, so it's 1950, where are we?
One final thing on the Bannon, grand jury here, and there's a warrant for his arrest now. What message does this send to the rest of the Trump people that basically might be trying to drag their heels, hoping that, you know, the SCOTUS, which they won't, will somehow step in here and stop, the information from being, you know, delivered to the committee, the congressional committee, as well as also being forced to testify?
Well, I guess in the end, what we really know is that, and this is simply true for Donald Trump, is that he's hung every single person he's ever met out to dry. I mean, historically, you can look at what he's been doing for the last 40 years, how many bankruptcies, how many people have been left in the lurch because of him, how many people who have supported him, who he then turns around and tears to pieces, every single person. So I think you realize that piece, you realize the number of times he has tried to sue to stop the disclosure of information, and you're seeing court after court, including conservative judges who are simply slapping those lawsuits down, including the courts of appeals, that it seems to me that there's a lot of people starting to count this and saying, gosh, you know, maybe we really are on our own at this time.
Let's turn to the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I've read about courts in the South in the 1950s and 60s where whites who were accused of racism were joking with the jury and the judge before the trial, you know, during the trial. Meanwhile, it was, you know, predetermined. I mean, in one case, I think it was 1 hour. The judge didn't even allow anyone to testify. He just said he sent the jury out. They came back 5 minutes later, but out of courtesy, he gave him an hour before he read the judgment against the African-American man. I have not, if you talk about being the 1950s, I have not seen a case which seems to be this biased, being run this biasly, if that's a word, by a judge in my lifetime. This is just it's clear that the judge's entire goal here seems to make sure that Kyle Rittenhouse does not spend a day in jail for shooting those three people in Wisconsin.
When we look at the judge's pretrial ruling specifically, when he said you can't use the term victim, which, by the way, you shouldn't be able to when you have the question. The central question here is whether they actually were. So I do understand his ruling when he said you can't use victim or even alleged victim. I actually believe that as a former prosecutor, but as a criminal defense attorney, I think that's appropriate. And yet, on the other side of this, when he turned around and he said that you can call people, everybody in the street, looters, arsonists, etc., you knew where we were going. Because in the end, when I'm training people how to try cases, when I try cases, one of the issues that we talk about is something called a theory of the case. What happened? What's the theme of your case? And what I said before this started, as soon as I saw those pretrial rulings, what I thought to myself, the theme of my case is, if these people are in the street, if these looters and these arsonists and these other sort of ne'er-do-wellers are in the street, don't you kind of deserve what you get? And that's what the judge teed up for the defense. So when they walked into this case, they walked into this case skipping because of exactly what has happened in the case.
Well, and since the case started, it's yeah. been—it's even been a much more of a comical sideshow. I mean, from the fact that he didn't give a questionnaire to the jurors, and didn't screen the jurors at all. There was one juror that had to be kicked off the jury because he was making racist jokes with a bailiff, and they had to remove him because it was so obvious that guy was going. You have numerous other things. I think the one thing that just blows my mind: he's a judge. He knows what he's doing. He leaves his phone on his desk with the volume turned on. He's a judge in a courtroom. He knows exactly what he's doing when he did this. And the phone rang, and it was Trump's campaign song on his phone ringtone. And I just sort of said, I mean, I have never seen so much bias being shown by a judge in a trial in my life, at least. I mean, it does feel as if this entire, the fix is in. And I just can't understand how in the process of, oh, I'll tell you what, let me just start with that. Since this trial began, am I crazy? This has just been a sideshow with the amount of favoritism towards Rittenhouse.
Yeah. It's been absolutely brutal. When you look at where the case is, and frankly, you take a look at the quality of both sides here, the defense has done very, very well in the case. And the prosecution has done extraordinarily poorly. I mean, in terms of the quality of the lawyering. And I hesitate to say that, but it actually is the truth. Some of the questions that have come out of the mouth of the prosecutor, when you're doing cross-examination, you do something like this. Matt, you're wearing shoes. You're wearing shoes with laces on them. You're wearing socks. Matt, you're wearing pants that button in the front, and you're wearing a shirt. It's long sleeve. It buttons down. It has a collar on it. I'm telling you what the answers are. The prosecutor's questions were like, why did you take a loaded firearm into this situation? It gives the defense, it gives Mr. Rittenhouse the opportunity to say, because I was scared and I wanted to defend myself. I mean, it's literally the very first thing you learn in trial school on how to try a case. This prosecutor has been doing the opposite. Oh. It's astounding to watch.
The entire concept here is a kid from Illinois who has no connection to Kenosha, Wisconsin whatsoever, right, who doesn't have a right to have a gun in Kenosha, Wisconsin, doesn't have any connection into a business or anything there, goes there in the defense mode. I mean, this should be an open and shut case, but I can't see how Rittenhouse isn't, taken out. I mean, I almost expect the judge to come off the bench and take photos with him after when he found acquitted of this on this case. You bring up the prosecutor. I actually agree with you. This is incompetence beyond incompetence, and it almost feels like, as I wrote to someone one time, it feels like it's A Few Good Men, where they put the Tom Cruise lawyer in there because they don't think he's going to fight for his clients. And it feels like that as well is part of the setup here.
You know, when we look at the case, I mean, here is really the analysis. And by the way, this is part of the problem right now, is if you take a look at the law, there's a New York case that is up before the Supreme Court, right? The U.S. Supreme Court right now, that actually sort of impacts this case in a way. What they're really arguing about is whether or not a state can actually control the ability of people to walk in the street with firearms, sort of anywhere they want, however they want. And I think it's likely the Supremes, because of the way it's packed right now, is going to come back and say, yep, pretty much any way you want to do it, you can do it with some limitations. But if we think about how this has been teed up, this is really what's going on here. What the defense has been able to do with the help of the judge is to lay it out like this. You don't get to talk about Rittenhouse really coming across borders with a gun that wasn't his and was illegally doing so and was 17 years old and didn't even have the right to possess that weapon and walked into a maelstrom like this, which created the potential incredible danger. That is all taken out of the mix. The only thing that they're really looking at is a myopic view that says, if I am Kyle Rittenhouse, and if I'm standing in the street and somebody comes at me and I feel in fear, reasonably, that they're coming at me, do I have the right? Do I have the right to defend myself? Ignore everything else and say, if somebody is reaching for my gun, if somebody is chasing me, despite the fact that you're the one who caused it to be chased, despite the fact that you're the one who pointed the gun and shot somebody else first. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But if you look at it myopically in the way that the defense and the judge have been successful at laying it out for a jury, I have a very real fear here that we're going to see an acquittal on all counts. And remember, the governor of Wisconsin has just come out saying, I'm ready to send 500 National Guard troops into Kenosha.
Well, because
that's how ugly this could get.
Well, and as you say, I mean, it's just the way this whole case is presented. I mean, they bring in the far right wing radio host, and then the judge orders, it says the prosecution can't point out the fact that guy is biased. And I'm like, you know, you're not even trying to hide this. And I mean, I understand. I mean, this is if what it feels like to me is that this feels like the Republicans nationally, and I actually think this might be kind of a setup on the national level, because the Wisconsin Republican Party, you know, they are basically big Trump people. And they're upset about how the fact that the 1-6 thing is going, they want to turn this into some sort of vindication. You know, it does feel like there are strings being pulled here, because this is just, it's ludicrous beyond ludicrous where this trial has gone at this point.
Well, when you get a judge who is who they are, and you and I have met people like this before our entire lives, as have your listeners, what you get are people who don't see themselves as biased when they just are telling the truth in their own heads.
Yes.
The problem, of course, is their bias is extraordinary, but they're incapable of seeing it. What's really unfortunate here is that the role of the court, the role of a judge, is to apply the law equally to all. And what we're seeing here are decisions that are inconsistent. We're seeing a volatility from the court that I find surprising, evidentiary rulings that are creating an environment that make it almost impossible for the prosecution to win. And then you bring in a prosecutor who could use a little more schooling.
Yes, is a little green. Yeah, to say the least.
is a little green, yeah. I'm trying to say it nicely, right? I mean, let's face it, if we were on cable, you and I could probably go for some, you know, we could probably get a little more colorful here on just how difficult this is.
You know, it's interesting. OJ trial. We remember the OJ trial, and let's face it, the prosecutors in the OJ trial screwed up badly. But
right.
But it wasn't like the deck was stacked against them. They just misprosecuted that case horribly, and so I don't necessarily think they did. It was the whole system was set up. This time around, though, I mean, it's comical. It is very To Kill a Mockingbird. To go into a trial and just see that the outcome has been predetermined by the judge.
Well, you know, you look at that situation and you can look at this, and I mentioned earlier sort of the nature of where we are around the country when it comes to the criminal justice system, and you compare what's going on there with the Arbery case down in Georgia. And this is the African-American who was running, again, unarmed, in a neighborhood where he gets targeted by three white men, one of whom, I mean, they have Confederate flags and they're chasing him down. The thing about that case, what makes that case more challenging than people realize, is that the application of the law that was in place at the time, which was put in place in 1863 to allow white people to chase down slaves, that was the law in place when this case takes place. And so what you get to do on the defense side is say, yes, this law is racist, but this law allows for certain things to happen. And so as a result, it doesn't matter whether you like it. It doesn't matter whether you hate it. You must apply this racist law. And it is racist. This racist law to the facts at hand here. That case, believe it or not, is harder than people realize because of the law that's in place. The Kenosha case, on the other hand, it's not the law that's wacky.
Yeah.
It's the process that's being conducted around the laws that is making the application of the laws themselves more tricky. And that's what's really frustrating. The downside, of course, is what we're seeing again and again and again is that rule of law, frequently people of color, and those who are marginalized are the ones who end up paying the price here.
In the Arbor case as well, you brought that one up. I mean, I will mention, too, I will say the judge, I think, there has done a very good job because I think he does understand this is a very tricky thing to kind of weigh. And so it seems to me, at least, and you know, the defense doesn't help themselves when they say they can't have black pastors in the viewing gallery.
That
does not help them. But the reality is I think that at least in that case, I see a judge who is being very thoughtful and understanding I cannot show bias here, but I am not going to allow one side to have an advantage, even though the law might, you know, their interpretation of the law says that they had that right to do it. I am not going to allow that to necessarily derail the prosecution's case per se. So I think that, I mean, I have more faith in that case being, you know, found guilty verdicts coming down in that case than I do with anything with Rittenhouse. Will the federal government, considering that's an Illinois kid going into Wisconsin, does the federal government come in here if this judge basically, like I said, jumps off the bench, takes some photos and gives a big hug and a high five to Kyle Rittenhouse, leads him out the door and puts him on his shoulders like a winning quarterback in a football game? You know, will the federal government have an opportunity to come on in here and file charges against Rittenhouse?
Could they? Could. Do I think that they would do that? I think they would be hesitant to do that because the charges that you could bring might not be that consequential depending upon what they could actually prove. And in the end, it's a very, very dicey thing. And the question is, would that actually make matters worse? Hmm. Obviously, nobody wants to see more danger, more violence. Kenosha has seen enough. But this is one of those things that's really, really scary for a lot of people.
I should also mention, too, there is going to be a civil trial on this, and Rittenhouse has no chance on that. I mean, and considering his age, his entire family, you know, we're looking, I'm going to guess, especially if it's a non-guilty charge, they're going to look at that case and say, this is the only case you're going to be able to get some justice for these victims here. And so that will be a massive filing against the family.
Well, you know, there's the other side of this, too, that there is always the potential for federal civil rights violations, depending upon, it's a little bit more dicey in a case like this because of the protected class of the people themselves. So think of what happened in the Derek Chauvin case with George Floyd. So he went down on the state charges, and then the Fed stepped in and charged him with essentially civil rights crimes, too. So there are those situations where there's the failure of the state to sort of do the things that they should do. But there are some times when the feds will step in anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened in the Derek Chauvin case.
Well, and by the way, I appreciate how the Derek Chauvin case went now. And the more every time I see this Kyle Rittenhouse case, I appreciate how much more the judge in that case, the court, the process he laid out there. I will say, do you think, I mean, there is an obvious point there that could be made. I mean, a kid from Illinois coming up to Wisconsin who has no right to be there, you know, that does feel like a civil rights, you know, they violated their civil rights by basically being someplace he shouldn't have been and opening, because you're right, he was aiming at them with a weapon before anyone else did anything.
Yeah, and you know what? You have to ask the question here, and this is, again, how they have set this up, and they haven't really asked it this way, is if you create the environment and you create the danger, and then you turn around and have to defend yourself from the danger that you created, whose fault is it? That's the question.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's a question that really isn't not going to be asked in the Kyle Rittenhouse case because of, again, how the defense, how the judge has ruled, what the defense is doing in this case. And again, I have to give them credit. They're doing a heck of a job. They truly, truly are. And the burden is on the state in every single case to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you did it. And the failure is on the prosecutor's office to do what needs to be done. It's not on the defense. Their job is to swing for their claim. Mm-hmm. And that's how the rule of law works. They don't like the outcome, but that means the prosecution needs to do a better job. Of course, they also need to have a fair playing ground in which to operate.
Question, just off the top of my head, last thing. Keith Ellison, if you think Keith Ellison was prosecuting that case, do you think he would win?
The Kyle Rittenhouse case, I think he would have run it far differently. And if you notice, the one thing that Keith Ellison did is he was very, very smart. He did not sort of go into the gutter politically on the George Shelton case. He actually saw above the frame. He said, let's look at this case and do what needs to be done. And he brought in really good people. I think he would do the very same thing in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. He's a smart guy. He's a good politician. He does some good things. I can love him. I can hate him. But he also understands, go with your strengths. Bring in the people to do the job. Mm-hmm. He would.
If you want the person to do the job for your defense, I tell you what, Jack Rice Defense, he's the best defense lawyer in town. If you have a question, give him a call. Sit down. Talk about your case. He can give you the best advice that he can. JackRiceLaw.com. JackRiceLaw.com. I'll link to all that a little bit later. We'll spotlight this as well. Jack, a privilege to have you on. Thank you very much as always.
Thank you, my friend. Always. Anytime you want.
Take care. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.